Hello, fellow law nerds. Welcome to another episode of Boom Lawyered, a Rewire.news podcast hosted by the legal journalism team that has a head cold. At least I do. I'm Imani Gandhi.
And I'm Jess Piclo. Rewire.news is dedicated to bringing you the best reproductive rights and social justice news, commentary, and analysis on the web. And the Team Legal podcast is part of that mission. So a big thank you to our subscribers and a welcome to our new listeners.
So the Trump administration is looking to let evangelical adoption and foster care agencies refuse to place children in LGBTQ or non-Christian families. Non-Christian meaning they won't place children with Jewish families, with Muslim families, and with any other host of religions that people celebrate or practice. In this episode, we're going to tell you about these efforts and who is behind them. We're going to talk about which states are chomping at the bit in order to let this discrimination against LGBTQ people and non-Christian families happen, and how the notorious RBG herself predicted this entire mess way back in the Hobby Lobby days, like back in the day when Jess and I were cutting our teeth on all this nonsense.
Okay, so let's give you folks some background on what's going on here. The Washington Post reported recently that the Trump administration has approved a waiver for a federally funded South Carolina child placement agency that would allow it to refuse to place kids with LGBTQ families in families that were not Christian. So this is about Miracle Hills Ministry, a Christian foster care agency that turned away a Jewish woman from fostering a child because, as a Jew, she did not share the ministry's beliefs.
Wait, what?
Yep.
You can't do that. As a Jew, I'm personally offended. But seriously, you can't do that. You can't just turn away people because they don't fit the sort of box that you want parents to fit into. This can't be constitutional.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly what the South Carolina Social Services said. They said, yo, whoa, hold up a second. That's discriminatory. And that's the kind of action that can get your license yanked.
Yeah, reasonable so far, up until the point then when South Carolina Governor Henry McMaster decides to butt in, and he goes and issues this executive order that grants this adoption and foster care agencies generally in the state, so not just Miracle Hills, but adoption and foster care agencies in the state, this right to discriminate on the basis of their religion. I mean, this happened.
But you can't do that.
I know. We know that. Let's maybe explain why you just can't do that.
All right. So the reason you can't do that, and the reason why Governor Henry McMaster is going to have a pretty big problem, is that there's a federal rule that specifically prohibits agencies that get federal funding from engaging in discrimination on the basis of religion or sexual orientation, right?
Mm-hmm.
So while Governor McMaster issues this executive order, he also petitions the Trump administration. Specifically, he petitions the Department of Health and Human Services to grant Miracle Hills an exemption. And do you know what happened, Jess?
I'm going to guess that they went ahead and granted that exemption, right?
Yeah, the Trump administration sure did.
Yep, they sure did. Back in January, they issued this four-page letter that granted Miracle Hills a quote-unquote faith-based initiatives program exemption. And what this did, Imani, was essentially rewrite federal civil rights laws in the process. The impact of this letter and this waiver is huge. Huge.
Astonishing. It's really astonishing and actually rather deplorable. So let's talk about who the hell is actually responsible for all of this.
Yes. Who is responsible for this? So one of the guys is Roger Severino. And that name may ring a bell for some of our listeners because we've mentioned him before. We did an entire episode about him. He's so terrible. He's one of the folks in charge at HHS, the agency who issued the waiver. And he is, let's see, let's remind some of our listeners. His office has a Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas bobblehead. Ooh, and a crucifix. And a crucifix.
Why does anyone need a Thomas bobblehead?
I mean, it pairs well with the crucifix, I guess. I don't know.
I guess that's true.
I don't know, but he's in charge of the Office of Civil Rights at HHS and is one of the masterminds of this whole faith-based initiatives policy. And this waiver falls right in line with what they're trying to do. And Imani, we told folks this is what was going to happen when they put Severino in charge. We said
really
this
did.
Kind of stuff was going to happen. And here it is. So, you know, we've got South Carolina, but it's not just a one-off here. This is a teaser of what the administration is hoping to tee off. So in a leaked 2020 draft budget request, it hasn't been made public yet, HHS is looking for broad budgetary authority to include faith-based foster care and adoption groups, those groups that we're talking about, like Miracle Hills here, who reject LGBTQ parents and apparently non-Christians too. They want them in the nation's $7 billion, with a B, $7 billion federally funded child welfare programs. They want them in on the money.
But how? Like, I'm just wondering, isn't there this whole thing about separation of church and state and how federal funding can't be used to prop up religious groups? Am I mistaken about that?
You're not mistaken about it. And neither are some of the House Democrats, thank God.
So the same day that the Trump administration leaked that they intended to include broad authority for discrimination in foster care and adoption in their budget, the chairwoman of the House committee, which oversees HHS funding, her name is Representative Rosa DeLauro, she pushed back. She said, quote, "Discrimination has no place in our child welfare services, whether it's anti-Semitism, Islamophobia, or anti-LGBTQ discrimination." She wasn't having any of the bullshit.
None of it. None of it. And most recently, 95 members of the House joined with her to say, nope, we are not having it. This is not what we do. So this is a very live fight. Not only is the Trump administration suggesting that they want this budgetary authority, and we're already starting to get pushback from the House, which is great. This is what we said, you know, post midterm elections. This was exactly the kind of stuff we wanted to see. But naturally, it doesn't end there, does it? The Trump administration has hinted that they might rewrite that rule that we mentioned that, you know, Miracle Hills had to get the waiver from. The Trump administration has hinted that they are going to go through the rulemaking process to rewrite the rule and allow some sort of broad exemption or faith-based process into it. And we've talked about rulemaking, right? And we know in previous episodes, and this administration doesn't do it so well.
We did a whole episode on rulemaking, and then you sang about how much you loved. Right, you sang about how much you loved admin law and thought it was sexy. It was fantastic.
It is. I'm bringing sexy back for agency law. It's my 2019 mission, but this is why it matters. People, agency right. law is sexy because they're trying to do this shit. Anyway. So that's really bad. They've suggested that they're trying to rewrite this rule. And I mean, we hinted at it at the start of the episode, but this was kind of totally predictable, wasn't it? I mean, RBG mentioned this and here we are.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, she really did. She literally called this. I mean, she had that great analogy about you know, my fist ends where the other person knows meets, right? Like, you can be religious. You can hold religious values. You can even express them. You can use your First Amendment rights to scream from the top of the mountaintops that you think homosexuality is a sin and that LGBTQ people or Jews or Muslims or whomever else shouldn't be allowed to adopt children, shouldn't be allowed to foster children. That's your First Amendment right. But what you cannot do is discriminate against people using religion as a weapon. That's just not what you can do. And that's what Ruth Bader Ginsburg said in her dissent from the Hobby Lobby decision, right? She said, this is where we're going to go. This is a danger. And then here we are, what, 6 years later, that danger is imminent.
Not only did, you know, RBG predict it, but, you know, this feels still kind of esoteric in a sense. Like, we're talking about, in a way, one agency in South Carolina and a fight that the Trump administration is itching to pick. But thankfully, we have sort of a wall of pushback in the House Democrats and an ability to, you know, hopefully stem some of that at bay. But why does it matter, though, for folks beyond that? Let's broaden this out, because the reality is it's not just the Trump administration and it's not just South Carolina, is it?
No, it really isn't. And, you know, not to go back to my homegirl Ruth, but she said, she basically said that there's no limiting principle when it comes to letting mm-hmm. people discriminate in the name of religion, right? So in Hobby Lobby, we were talking about birth control and whether or not, you know, closely held corporations could discriminate against its employees who want to take or obtain birth control. Mm-hmm. And then we started talking about cakes, right? The masterpiece cake shopping of America, where now people, evangelical Christians, don't want to bake cakes for gay couples. Mm-hmm. And now, you know, I just wrote a piece last week about how there's more nonsense going on in Arizona with wedding invitations and these super Christian women who say that their wedding invitations are expression of their love for God and blah, blah, blah. And that's why they don't want to serve same-sex couples. And then, and now we're going to, we're just refusing to place children in perfectly healthy homes in the name of the Lord? Apparently. I mean, do you know how many kids there are that need foster care? How many kids there are that need to be adopted? And we're looking at perfectly great people, people who would make wonderful parents, and saying, you can't adopt these children because you're Jewish. You can't adopt these children because you're gay. That is wrong.
It's just, it's extra gross in the context of the family separation that's happening. And we know children are coming up through Christian agencies. And so all of it feels very specifically missionized. So, ew.
It does. It really does feel like it kind of harkens back to the days when the government was stripping Native American people of mm-hmm. their children and just passing them out to white people. Mm-hmm. It's horrifying. It's horrifying. They've lost thousands and thousands of kids. Thousands of kids may be living in these evangelical homes that are potentially not safe, but have been deemed safe simply by virtue of the fact that they are evangelical Christians, and that, you know, that's not right. If any one of you have seen Abducted in Plain Sight on Netflix, you know, I mean, that was about LDS and Mormons, but you know what can happen when religion is so entangled in child rearing to the point where children are left neglected. This is a real problem. And it's not just happening in South Carolina, right? Texas, for example, has asked for a similar waiver, mm-hmm. allowing them to discriminate against non-Christian people and against LGBTQ people. Tennessee, Kentucky, they both have legislation pending this session. Kansas and Oklahoma have also passed similar bills.
Oh my God.
This is a widespread problem, and it's only going to get worse.
You're right, Imani. It's not just South Carolina. It's all these places. And we should probably give some of the procedural recap, because this isn't necessarily a brand new fight either.
No, it's
this
not.
Is a fight that goes back all the way to 2015, the Obergefell decision that said marriage equality is the law of the land. And this is one of the front lines on the conservative response to Obergefell. Almost immediately after that decision, we saw states like Michigan and Mississippi pass these far-reaching laws. Remember those First Amendment defense laws? Remember that?
FADA!
The FADAs? FADA!
Luke, I am your FADA.
I mean, it just happens. When you spend so much time in this place, you come up with jokes like, Luke, I am your fada.
I'm not proud. Actually, I am kind of proud of that
You
one.
Should be. That is like an amazing law nerd dad joke of all time right there. But states like Michigan and Mississippi, right after the decision, started passing this nonsense that said agencies that receive state funds could discriminate based on their religious beliefs. And, you know, those laws sort of fizzled out, mostly because it became immediately politically unpopular to be so anti-gay in the wake of such a decision that made many, many people feel good, even if John Roberts felt sad inside, which he said from the bench when he was reading his dissent. It makes me feel sad inside.
Did he really say that?
No, he didn't. I'm paraphrasing. I'm paraphrasing. But it fizzled out a little bit. But then, you know, as tides do, they shifted a little bit. And evangelicals also, bless their hearts, won't quit. They are the Energizer bunnies who just won't quit. And they started sensing that they maybe were gaining some political ground again. And so they started pressing their luck in places like Philadelphia, for example, where Catholic Social Services recently lost a city contract for pulling this kind of nonsense. And Catholic Social Services in Philadelphia tried to get the Supreme Court even to step into the fight. And this was right before the Kavanaugh confirmation. And we covered it a little bit on the site. It didn't work. The Supreme Court turned the case away over strong objections of both Alito and Gorsuch. So that also gives us a little indication of where at least four of the conservatives would be leaning on this. And I'm guessing, you know, Justice Kegstan is probably in line with the fifth.
Oh my God. Okay.
So that's the TLDR of where we are.
Fucking Justice Kegstan. I can't. Oh my God. All right. Well, on that note, maybe we ought to talk about what the case is supposed to be about, as opposed to what
this is supposed to be about Jesus. Imani, it doesn't get any deeper than Jesus.
It's all about Jesus. Everybody loves Jesus. I mean, so evangelicals are claiming that this is about their religious freedom and their constitutional right to practice their religion as they see fit without the government getting all up in their business. You know, like I mentioned before, Masterpiece Cake Shop, the Arizona Invitations case, Brush and Nib Studio.
Yep.
But what the case is actually about. Let's talk about what the case is actually about.
Their motive.
Their motive. And would it surprise you, Jessica, to know that their motive is money?
Get the fuck out, Imani.
I am shocked. This is my shocked face. You can't see it, but it's brown. So evangelicals are trying to find a way to get both state and federal funding and discriminate. Mm-hmm. And these agencies are free to limit placements. They're free to discriminate against whomever they want. They're free to say, we're only going to send children to families who have a person named Amanda in them. If you have a wife named Amanda, then come on down. We're going to give you this kid. They can do whatever the fuck they want. Uh-huh. But they can't do that and accept government funding. Like, that's separation of church and state. That's basic stuff here. You cannot take federal funding, $7 billion worth, which is available, take some of that money, and then exclude people based on who they are.
Absolutely. Like, that bears repeating one more time. This isn't about religious liberty. This is about wanting government money to conduct business however you damn well please. And right. You just can't do that. So go on with your bad self and have your religiously affiliated agency. It's all good, right? But you don't get to have my dollars to do that. It's just simple. And this is really important. And, you know, something that I want to stress as we sort of like close the loop on this argument is that we have to pay attention to the funding argument and these streams, because conservatives have had a lot of luck convincing this court that religious groups should get in line for funding for secular services. We covered a case way back when called Trinity Lutheran, and this was one of Gorsuch's first like big appearances as a newly anointed justice. I mean, my God, Imani, remember those days? Ugh. Remember when all it was Justice Gorsuch?
Oh, God, now we've got keg stand, dude. Ugh, the worst.
But one of his first real big imprints on the court was in the Trinity Lutheran case, and to help open this pipeline of government funding when religious groups are operating in what they call quote-unquote secular spaces. And in the Trinity Lutheran case, that was a church. They're giving money directly to a church because they have a daycare on service. So this is very much also an extension of Trinity Lutheran. And we're seeing it bubble up in the federal courts. We've got cases dealing with funding religious schools that discriminate and funding social service agencies that promote conversion therapy. Another topic that we've talked about on this podcast. Sakes.
Yeah. Can I just say real quick, Mike Pence is the freaking worst.
Yeah. No, seriously. We'll have an episode called Mike Pence is the Worst. And all we do is primal scream.
Exactly. So let's talk about who is to blame, right? What's the final judgment in all of this? Who is to blame? Mm-hmm. Who do you think is to blame?
Let's see. Well, we've identified Roger Severino and the Trump administration, obviously, right. But that doesn't feel quite enough.
Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and say we used to like this guy, but then he up and just peaced out of the court before he had a chance to actually cement his legacy on LGBTQ rights. Who is that man?
I'm still mad, Tony.
God damn it, Tony. Yes, we're talking about Anthony Kennedy, of course. Hobby Lobby is a disaster that opened these floodgates, that opened these gates that say it's okay to discriminate as long as you base that discrimination on some quote-unquote sincerely held religious belief. But the problem with Kennedy is that, you know, he spent a lot of his career promoting the rights and dignity of LGBTQ people. In his Obergefell decision, he talks so much about the dignity of gay people and how marriage is part of, you know, this institution, and that gay people should have just as many rights to engage in this solemnified act as much as heterosexual couples do. But then he sort of just dropped the ball. He didn't go that extra mile, and that extra mile would have required him to say, you know what? LGBTQ people are a protected class.
Yeah.
Under the Equal Protection Clause, they deserve some sort of standard of review, right? We've talked about standard of review, rational basis, intermediate, strict scrutiny. They deserve a higher standard of review than, the states just feel like it. Because they are marginalized people, they are oppressed people, just as black and brown people are, just as immigrants are, just as these civil rights laws protect religion, they ought to protect LGBTQ people. And he could have stuck around and made that clear. There are cases coming up in the pipeline that really could have used Anthony Kennedy's word. But he decided, you know what, I'm fucking out, I don't need this shit anymore, I gotta go.
And I mean, this dignity harm is something I want to talk about just real quick, because he could have seen this coming. And I mean, what is a greater dignity harm than being a committed in a committed partnership and look to foster a child and be turned away by the state based on who you are, right, as an LGBTQ person, as an atheist, as a Jew, as a Muslim, like whatever your status as a non-Christian, to have the state say you are not worthy based on your status to take care of this child, to contribute in this way. That's a citizenship harm, that's a dignity harm, and that is a direct line from Obergefell, and I'm mad.
And let me just add, you know, just a little bit of a sidebar. As we've been seeing through the news this week, all of the people who are attacking Representative Omar as being anti-Semitic, and there's a lot of people on the right. I mean, Mike Pence, for example, tossed out a tweet about how anti-Semitism is inappropriate and is not American and yada yada. But you can bet, you can bet your bottom dollar or your left boob that Mike Pence is all on board for allowing these agencies to turn away Jewish people as parents. So even let's put aside LGBTQ people, because we know that people like Mike Pence and a lot of evangelical Christians don't like gay people because they're gay. How is it on the one hand they are arguing that anti-Semitism has no place in America, but on the other hand, you know good and goddamn well that they're going to support this nonsense? Yeah. I can't. Someone square that circle. I can't. I can't figure it out.
Nope. I mean, you know, it's hypocrisy.
Yeah, it's hypocrisy. Exactly. Jinx, buy me a Coke.
With a heavy pour.
With a heavy pour. A heavy pour of Jack Daniels, you mean, I think. Oy vey. So, yeah, that's going to wrap it up for us today. It's a depressing situation we're in. LGBTQ people are under siege. Non-evangelical Christian people are under siege. And this is something that you should be aware of, something you should be fighting about. And if you want to talk to us about it more, you can feel free to tweet us. I'm at Angry Black Lady. Jess is at Hegemommy, H-E-G-E-M-O-M-M-Y. You can join our Facebook group, Boom Lawyered. For all the people who've tried to join over the past several months, I have declined all of your invitations because you didn't answer the question. So that gives you a chance to apply again and just answer the question. It's a super simple question, and we will let you write in.
We will. We promise.
And until that, see you on Das Tubes.
See you on the tubes. Boom Lawyered is created and hosted by Jessica Mason Piclo and Imani Gandhi. This episode was produced by Mark Folletti, who is also our executive producer. And the Rewire.news editor-in-chief is Jody Jacobson.